Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex podcaster, and I'm often attracted to dungeon masters, usually the D&D kind and not the play party kind. Although, you know, the play party kind, they can be pretty cute and hot too. Who are you, friend?
I'm Billy Laura. I'm a sex educator and porn maker, and I do not allow myself to flirt while I am DMing, no matter how hot some of the people I get to watch play are. I am being a professional and looking respectfully.
You know, in retrospective, that's not a phrase.
We're both remembering how to talk again. Yes. I don't.
Recording in the morning, which normally we do not do.
No, not at all.
In retrospect, looking back at the times when I have felt attracted to a dungeon master in a play party situation, I wonder how much of it was my sense that they were not going to engage with me, no matter how flirty I might get, because it's like, it's almost like, yeah, it's like a thrill of the chase, like you want what you can't have thing. Like, but also the professionalism in and of itself is hot, like, because it shows discipline and commitment to ethics and, yeah.
Well, right. Like, so I have two thoughts here. Unfortunately, you do have to experience the silly one first because as you were describing that, my brain presented me with the imagery of someone hitting on a DM, a la the energy of people making fun of those British guards in front of the castle who can't react or
right,
whatever.
Right, just like waving in front of their face. Like,
right, exactly. Saying silly things in their ear. Like that energy, that trope, but you hitting on a hot DM. Anyway, now, as long as I experienced that, so we all had to experience it.
Yeah, I do want to say, I'm not like pestering people, like,
right.
And I'm reading the room and I'm like, you know, but.
That was the comical Scrubs jump away cut that my brain gave me.
Yeah.
That is not actually like.
Takes place at Fuckingham Palace.
We are actually going to talk about like DMing in a much more serious sense and all of the things. And my actual like thoughtful dildorky response to that is that, the DMs you are attracted to are also the DMs that would not hit on you while DMing, like that. All of the things that makes a DM take that seriously is like the type of human that you are into. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it reminds me of a time when I was like flirting with this guy at a party, not a DM, just a guy who was at the party. And I told him that I was like into him and like would be down to like hook up that night. And he was like, normally I would say like, absolutely yes. But like, you've had a few drinks and I just don't feel right about that. But I will continue flirting with you if that's cool. And we can do that another time. And I was like, that is so hot that you said that.
I know. Do you know the song Text Me in the Morning?
Yes.
Neon Trees?
I love that song.
My brain is now. Anyway.
Yeah.
This is just going to be a jumpy little podcast because we're at that point in the day for me.
Yep.
Okay, I mean, at this point, we have talked so much about flirting with DMs. I do feel like we should pause for a minute to be like, hey, this is like, I didn't mean my third thing to be a thesis statement on ethics of DMing or whatever, you know, but now we're here. So I do feel like I do need to give context to what we just, and for me, it is not, I mean, it is a rule that some head DMs have given me that some people, or conferences, events, leaders, any of the, you know, whoever is in my boss when I'm working the floor at a dungeon. Some of them have told me, hey, we have a specific rule here that you don't need to be flirting with people or planning scenes or picking people up or talking to, you know, socializing with people while you're DMing. That's not a thing everywhere. And I don't have a hard line on like, listen, if you're my friend, you don't ever come over to me. Like, I have had people I seen with earlier walk past me while I'm DMing and poke a bruise or something, right? My friends and the people that I play with regularly also tend to be people who can read a room and look at me and see if I am ambiently doing my, like, idle animation, walking around the dungeon, seeing what's going on, or if I am, like, Hawkeye's on a scene looking for something else, you know, walking with purpose across the room to get some. And they time appropriately, right? Because there are idle bits of my DM shift. But I'm not going to talk to anyone for any length of time that it is going to begin to distract me from what I need to be doing, mm-hmm. right? I'm not going to talk to someone long enough that that scene that I walked past 5 minutes ago has now progressed from cozy little warm-up to intense needle play that I didn't realize was about to happen. The needles were maybe in a closed bag last time I walked by, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's my job to have an idea of what's going on in the dungeon. So I'm not going to talk to a friend or someone that I have a crush on long enough for them to become the shiniest thing in the room.
Yeah.
Because that's going to make me bad at my job. I know who I am.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I wouldn't really flirt for an extended period of time with right. a DM for this reason, because it is sort of like hitting on the lifeguard or something. Like, they are doing important stuff and they do need to be paying attention.
Right. And secondarily, I'm harder to approach if I have someone next to me and it is important that like I am doing important safety stuff. I'm also customer service mm-hmm. in the dungeon. I also really want to be approached by attendees of the dungeon for any number of reasons. Actually, we'll probably get into that in a second. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of a power dynamic thing there. There's a bit of a like, I don't want to be like, the DMs are cool, but like they do, if you are new to a dungeon space and you see someone that is trusted by whoever is in charge of trusting people there to walk around that space and give people guidance and tell people if they're doing things okay and has maybe a shiny little vest on or something, you are presenting yourself as someone with a little bit of authority or social clout in that community, mm-hmm. right? That is at least respected or trusted in some sort of way by some, I don't know, mysterious other thing, but that thing also seems like it has authority, right?
Yeah.
And all of that can tip the scales a little bit one way or another. And like, I don't know, I don't feel great hitting on people from that position. Mm-hmm. And I also like, I'm not super in a position to really turn someone down. Like, I am also customer servicing.
Yeah.
I'm not in the same way if you hit on me when I'm standing behind a register at work. If you hit on me when I'm wearing a vest in a dungeon, I might say, like, oh, you know, I'm not going to say, ew, fuck off. Like, I'm never going to be that guy, frankly.
Yeah.
But if you're, like, real making me real uncomfortable, I'm gonna soften that no more than I might when I was only speaking for myself, because I'm speaking for an organization in yeah. some type of way, you know?
Yeah, it is good though that there's this sort of built-in excuse, I guess, if yeah. someone was like getting really too insistent, that you could just mm-hmm. be like, there's a policy, or I have a policy that like I don't mm-hmm. do this, like I don't flirt with people in this situation, and then hopefully they leave you alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
While we're talking about DMing, mm-hmm. I have a feeling that just with our listener base being the types of people that they are, that there's probably some people hearing this who are like curious now about DMing. Like, mm-hmm. what kind of like traits or qualities would you think someone would have that might make them a good DM, and like how do you get involved like that?
Well, I'm gonna answer the second question first. Getting involved as a DM, the best way to do that is to look for events around you, ideally ones with an organizational structure that you respect, right? Mm-hmm. And volunteer. DMing is pretty much always a volunteer position, and we always need more. Hmm. A lot of really great structures will have some kind of training for their DMs, some kind of, at the very least, interview process and orientation set up and like... I know when I started DMing at Tess, I took a couple of, like, 2-3-hour workshops, I think, like a little intensive over a weekend kind of thing.
Yeah.
And a little bit of online training stuff mm-hmm. that I've found really helpful, and that is kind of the baseline of my DM knowledge. Like, there are a couple of people that I can point to that I'm like, that is who I learned DMing from.
Mm. That's more instruction than I would have expected. I'm glad to hear that, yeah. that that exists.
Tess does lean pretty hard on training for their DMs. They are just part of probably why I take it seriously.
Yeah. Is there like first aid involved in that training, or like what kinds of things?
Not much. First aid in most places that I have worked. So a lot of this training is for that I have done for DMing at conferences and things. Mm-hmm. When I've DM'd at individual parties, a lot of times the training has been lower, or it has just been they've given me like a questionnaire or interviewed me, or just I've gotten recruited to DM at parties simply because people have seen me DM other places and like organizers there are like, hey, you're local, right? What do you, you know? So most of the conferences that I DM for, first aid is outside my bounds. I have a couple of Band-Aids and maybe a couple of alcohol swabs in my DM kit. Mm-hmm. Anything beyond that, I'm calling someone from medical. Luckily, a lot of the bigger conferences I've done have Operation Hammond, I know, does a couple of cons, and I know a lot of other cons just have, like, medical professionals to some degree volunteering as, like, medical team over there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call the people who are, like, EMTs and shit. I'm not, yeah. I don't, that's above my pay grade.
Right, right.
My job is to have a radio that can get a hold of them.
Mm. Yeah.
Wherever I'm working. Most of the DM trainings that I've done are a hodgepodge of 101 safety for what you will often see in a dungeon. Mm-hmm. May also include rules for that specific organization, and is going to include a lot of level setting on what you approach for and what you don't. Mm. What is worth interrupting a scene for and what isn't. Because it's really easy to swing too far on either side of that pendulum, right? It's really easy to not want to talk to anyone about, like, oh, they're doing a thing. Oh, it's probably fine. I don't know. Like, approaching people is sometimes scary. I get that. On the other side of that pendulum, though, is, I don't like what that looks like. They should stop it. Ah! Right. Which is another thing that some newbies lean towards, which, again, I get that. You're going to see things you don't like when you're DMing, though. Sorry, babes. Like, if that is not a thing that is within your comfort level and risk profile, like, know the organizations you're volunteering for or the events you're volunteering for. Know what kind of things they allow and don't. Mm-hmm. And if their rules allow stuff that you are not comfortable looking at, you're not a good DM for that space, right? Yeah. That's it. Like, you know, asterisks here, right? Like, sometimes I've had places where, like, often blood or fire is going to happen in a particular area of a dungeon because it requires safety things that the rest of the dungeon doesn't. Also requires lighting that the rest of the dungeon doesn't always want.
Right.
So sometimes you can say, this is our DM for that, who is qualified in that, and they just hang out in this area and other places. Like, some places will do that, but, you know, your mileage may vary. Figure out what works for you. As far as what makes someone, like, good at DMing, an interest in everything that I am saying. If everything that I'm saying is, you're like, yeah, wow, I'm curious about that. I'm interested in all that, right? Like, that matters to you. Cool. Great. Love that. You do need to be extroverted enough to be able to approach people mid-scene or have lots of people approaching you, asking you about weird shit. You need to be good at quick problem solving. You need to be, like, you know, how retail asks for people who work well in a fast-paced environment. Sometimes, you know, people are going to throw weird shit at you while music is blasting and someone is hanging upside down on one side of you and someone over there has got needles in their face. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
Right? Again, very much depending on your play space. But
yeah.
There can be a lot happening. Like, I had a moment once at a dungeon where a person walked up to me and placed into my bare hand a still running vibrator while saying, found this on the floor. I don't know what to do with it.
Wow.
And just as my hand kind of closed around that and accepted that reality in my life, another person came up next to me and went, they're stuck in the cage and I can't get them out. Can you help me?
Oh, no.
Sure.
Did they get out of the cage?
Yeah. Everything was totally fine. There was, like, a piece of chain had, like, wedged itself uncomfortably against a bit of thing. Whatever.
Okay. When the bondage scene gets too real.
Right. Like, everything was fine. And that person was correct to grab me because mm-hmm. I was able to say, hey, great, you stay with your partner. Your partner's like a little nervous about this because they're spacey and now this is happening. Within probably 5 minutes, all of those things were handled. The vibrator was off and wrapped in a rubber glove and placed in lost and found. The person was gotten out of the cage, but the person was right to grab me, right? Because I was able to have eyes on that. They were able to focus on taking care of their partner in the ways that their partner needed to be taken care of while they were all spacey, right? And we got all of it handled, and that is my job as a DM. And also... and again, that is one of my more overwhelming moments as a DM. And also... you need to be a kind of person who can take in all of that information and organize it. And on my good days, I can. So it is one of the reasons why I often volunteer as a DM. Sometimes they'll ask, like, why is this the position that you want? And generally, it's where my skills feel the most useful. Mm-hmm. Like, I am a person who knows about this. I am a person who professionally talks to people about this. Nothing anyone says to me when they approach me as a DM is that gonna freak me out? Has ever freaked me out beyond, like, okay, that's a lot. Great, let's handle that, right? Like, beyond a reasonable level of, oh, yes, you're correct. That does demand attention right now. You have all of mine. Let's go.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I want in charge of things in the dungeon. So that is what I volunteer for. It is, like, also... A lovely, fun, exhibitionistic job. I would not spend 3 hours watching what's going on in a busy dungeon. Generally, I would get overwhelmed just as a spectator. I would need to leave. But having a job there and doing a thing means I get to see all of the things, and like, you can enjoy that, but that shouldn't be the biggest reason you're DMing. You are allowed to love and like relish in that, and great, fantastic, and... you're not there to watch. If you're just sitting there watching a scene, mm-hmm. you're not doing your job. So, like,
yeah,
you know, that can be a reason to be to DM. It should not be the only reason you DM. And if it is, at least focus on also being good at it.
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm subtweeting someone. I'm definitely not.
Do you think I should title this episode Carpe DM?
Going to be about DM, but it's truly that's where we're ending up. I can talk about that forever, though. I have so many thoughts about it, and I love it.
Well, I mean, from an attendee perspective, like, do you want to say anything more about like what kinds of things someone could approach a DM about, or any guidance interacting with DMs?
Oh, absolutely. If you are considering approaching a DM, please fucking do. Please come talk to us. I always want to hear from folks in the dungeon. Often people will come to me for, hey, I have this thing that needs to be plugged in. I have this scene that's going to take up a little bit of space. I'm looking for a piece of furniture that could handle something like this. Mm-hmm. Any of those. Yeah, let me help you find the thing. Please don't move it on your own. Please don't start digging around behind things. I will help you. I'm wandering around this room for the past several hours thinking about how we can use it. Let's figure out how to use it for you. Fantastic. Give me a little puzzle. similarly, come up to me and tell me if you're about to do something a little fucky. My favorite attendees of the DM of the fucking dungeon are the ones who come up to me. I'm about to do some stupid shit. Great. Tell me what it's going to look like. Because the people who know that it is stupid shit that they are about to do, and know that I would love to be told about the stupid shit rather than encounter it by surprise, are the people who are doing it in a risk-aware enough way.
Are you like, talking about, like, messy blood play type stuff? Or, like, what kind of stuff would you file under stupid shit?
Oh, well, so that's the thing. Sometimes it might be, I'm going to do some blood shit that's going to look scary or whatever. Sometimes I'm going to do this rope thing that's kind of... And sometimes it's, I'm going to do this kind of impact with this insane implement, right? I'm going to tie myself to this thing that I shouldn't tie myself to, right? I'm going to, you know, whatever. The people who are able to know that this thing that I am about to do is relatively risky within the type of play that I am playing and is going to look relatively risky to the person whose job it is to look for relatively risky play are the people who are also accounting for that risk. Because the second half of that conversation is often, and I'm going to do XYZ to mitigate that risk. And this is what I have to do when that, like, to solve that problem when that goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, the people who don't realize that the thing they're doing is stupid shit are the people that worry me, mm-hmm. right? And if you don't approach me and say, I have this little plan that might look like a lot from where you are, I am left to kind of hawk and stare at your scene for longer than we're probably both comfortable with. I'm sorry you've noticed me here. I do need to keep watching for a second.
Yeah.
Deciding how steady your hand looks. Are you doing things that I have been taught are in my, like, if this is a thing I know a lot about, great. If this is a thing that I'm like, well, I've been to 2 101 classes on it, and a couple of my friends do it. So I'm going to see if you're doing any of the things they bitch about when they see people doing it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen anything that makes me nervous, and you seem pretty steady. So, like, I am going to trust. It seems like you know what you're doing. Okay, I'm going to keep half an eye on this scene. But okay, and I may back off a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I may ask other DMs if they know you, if they've seen you do this, whatever. There's a lot more research that I don't have to do if you have come up to me and let me have a conversation with you and let me ask you real quick, okay, well, what, you know, do you have XYZ thing? What is your plan for this? Could you actually do it over there instead of over there so we don't have to worry about the carpet? You know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I love just being approached and told a scene is going to happen. The other thing, other than, like, practical physical risk stuff, definitely let us know if anything loud or, like, overly emotional is happening. CNC stuff, love to be warned about. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Some dungeons have particular spaces where they might, like, may or may not allow them, right? Like, if you're planning a exceptionally loud, really combative CNC scene, the DM might, like, ask you to do it in a particular area, or tell you, hey, actually, you can't parade that through the entire dungeon, right? Or maybe, like, okay, you want to grab someone over there and bring them all the way over to those mats? Great. We'll make sure the path is clear. We'll station DMs here and here. And you know what? I'll go distract your captor for you, and I'll be talking to them when you know, you grab them, right? Mm-hmm. Cool. Great. Like, sometimes we will absolutely facilitate the thing. Sometimes we may be like, hey, we need to trim it here. Hey, like, this space may not respond well to a particular level of, you know, whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, it could be physical risky things, and it could also just be a volume and things that could be intense for other attendees to overhear, which is, I think, also a thing worth considering when you were planning public scenes.
Yeah.
Depending on the baseline of play in that space, it may or may not be the appropriate space for that scene, right? If it is, if you've got a 101 party of a bunch of, like, relatively newbie kinksters there for mostly public sex, it's not that there is something wrong with you for doing this big, intense, you know, grab and, you know, capture and CNC scene or something, but, like, that's not the room to do it in, mm-hmm. right? So DM might help you figure things out.
Okay, cool. We could probably pivot out of talking about exclusively DMs and DMing at this point. But you did kind of mention, like, a beginner DMing mistake a few minutes ago. And I wondered if you could talk about, like, just beginner mistakes in general that newbies to attending play parties might run into.
Yeah, for sure. I think a dungeon can be really overwhelming for a lot of newbies, and it feels like, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, or I was thinking about it and plan to talk about it this week, because public sex and public nudity and kink, public kink, is not a thing that exists for most people out in the real world. They compartmentalize sex into this little container that they only think and talk about and only engage with when they are doing it.
Yeah.
They then come into a play space and, well, it's not the outside world where I can't think or talk about or engage with sex because everyone's naked and fucking in here or doing kink things or whatever it is that's happening in this place. So I guess I am all the way in this other bubble where all the sex things are okay.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the stuff, the people that who, like, engage with any attendee at the party as if they are someone that they can just walk up to and grab their ass or like hit on in whatever ways, or will like lean into your scene and be like, oh, that's really cool. What are you doing? What's happening here? Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to be aware that when you are coming into a play space, yes, some of the rules of the outside world are actually kind of thrown out the window in a weird way, right? There is a lot of things that you could do that is allowed. And also, a lot of the rules of the outside world do still apply, right? Like, so that's not to say that, like, you can't approach people in the dungeon, right? Often, there are play areas that are more social and other areas that are more play-oriented in places like this. So lean more on the social areas and don't approach people who are already actively playing, right? I've seen people lean in and try and ask the top questions about what they are doing to their submissive mid-fucking scene. And it's like, bro... Like, you can't do that.
That makes me wonder, because, like, I get that impulse for sure. And immediately I was like, well, I would just write it down and ask them about it after. And then I was like, wait, would that be a super weird look if I was at the play party with my little reporter's notebook? Like, would people be weirded out by that?
I would not have it out consistently.
Yeah.
Most places aren't going to allow you to have a phone.
Right, but a notebook is different.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's why I'm like, I don't think I would, like, have it in a pocket and be able to, like, pull it out, jot a thing down, and go back. And I would, like, kind of find a more private space to do that. I've had people in my dungeons with, like, figure drawing books and stuff. And had to talk to, like, other DMs and organizers and, like, actually, like, figure out how do we feel about this? How is it? Because you can't have a camera in here.
Right.
And I do understand what you're doing and the impulse, and the artist in me is like, well, that's fascinating. It's actually really fucking cool. I love that for you. The DM in me knows that some people here have very serious and valid anxieties about anything they do here being connected in any way to any other part of their life.
Yeah, it can, like, affect that, their job. It can affect, like, custody of kids. Like, we've seen cases where this has happened.
Yeah, truly could have truly devastating consequences on their life.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to even fucking wonder about that when they are in my dungeon.
Right.
It shouldn't have to fucking cross their mind. This should be a place where they feel safe to not worry about that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I realized that, like, I love taking notes. It helps me process things. But you're totally right that there's something about the sight of a person staring at you while they're writing in a notebook that's like, what the fuck's going on?
Right. What are you writing down? Where are you taking that information? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, absolutely, that makes sense. And I kind of love that. And yeah, like, approaching people after they are done playing and saying, I saw your scene, it was fucking fantastic. Is like great, and a great way to approach people. Oh, I really enjoyed watching you the other night. Right. Like, because watching people play and being watched is a big part of public play. Like, that's a thing we enjoy.
Yeah.
And often, like, I mean, if you have a question, depending on how recently they were playing, you might be like, if you see me later, can, like, I had a question actually about what you're doing. If you have the spoons to answer it for me, can you grab me at some point or whatever? Like, I do love setting that up as some, like, giving someone already an out.
Yeah.
And not expecting them to, like, not knowing how long their aftercare is going to be and not expecting them to be able to, you know, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, back to beginner. Don't approach people when they're mid-fucking scene to do that.
Yeah, take a mental note if you must.
Yeah, yeah. Also, be aware of your surroundings and just, like, your physical presence. Like, this sounds so silly. You see people, I don't know, any of my listeners who live in cities know what tourists look like in cities and the ways that just the slightly wider eyes and the looking everywhere except where they're going and the moving kind of slow, and the tourists in the dungeons look kind of the same, except there are flying implements in the dungeon. And if you are staring one way, walking the other way, and not paying attention to the pathways that we put between the furniture in there, you're gonna get hit with the backswing of a flogger or something.
Yeah.
Right? And none of us want that.
Yeah.
None of us, like, so stop walking through my scenes. I love you. You belong in this space. You, I want you to learn how to move comfortably through this space. I also want you to not get a concussion in the process. Please come over here, little baby.
Yeah, now I'm thinking about the physics of a flogger that could get... I guess you definitely could get a concussion from a flogger. Some floggers are pretty damn heavy.
Yeah, I've seen, like, big heavy leather ones, big heavy fur ones. Like, oh yeah, fucking chain. Anyway, also, generally don't hover at a specific scene. And this has got like 17 asterisks, right? If this is a scene with 20 people crowded around it, yeah, you can be the 21st person. That this scene is a show. They're doing something fucking cool, right? If there is a chair like 20 feet from the scene and you can kind of chill in the chair and look and kind of scan the room and also watch that scene as it goes, right? Great. If they're your friends, sure, right? But don't like come up next to a scene and like hang out the whole time and like be the only person who has watched the entirety of that scene of these strangers that you don't know. Certainly don't take your bits out while you're doing it. Like, you're make like at that point your presence is becoming very much a part of a scene because that is atypical behavior, so it is going to get noticed.
Yeah.
Right? So it is much more common if you are a spectator at a gym, if you are a spectator at a dungeon to take a couple of laps and watch a scene a couple of times or find somewhere comfortable to sit and talk to people where you can see a couple of different scenes that are happening, to socialize with a friend there or to meet someone new. But to have 100% of your attention on one scene is not the etiquette there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so we've talked about a lot of the situations in which you should not approach someone at a play party. But I would love to hear your advice for approaching someone who you don't know, but who you think you might want to play with if they're up for it. How do you make that approach? I'm so socially anxious. I have such a hard time with stuff like this.
As you were saying that last sentence, I was gearing up to answer your question with, see, I don't know how great of a person I am to ask because I am a coward. However,
in theory, what should one theory, do?
No, this is a thing that I have at times in my life been good at and at times in my life found harder.
Yeah.
For me, it's usually easiest to do when as less of a direct question. I don't know. I guess I should back up. First of all, if you're approaching someone for play, typically I would like to just approach them to get to know them first, right? Find out what, you know, chat with them, find out what kind of player they are, whatever, right? So just approaching someone at a dungeon, say hi, ask them how the event's been so far, what have they gotten up to, what are they looking for, what do they got planned. There are a million things happening around you at a dungeon that you can, or that have just happened, or that are about to happen, that you can point to and talk about. So that is where I would start, just to get some kind of conversation going, right? And if you get to a point of talking to them about, like, what kind of things they're looking for, what kind of things they enjoy, whatever, and maybe have flirted a couple of times at that point, through that conversation with someone, often the things you enjoy, the things that have brought you to the dungeon together, will come up. And for me, I find it easiest and least nerve-wracking to say something along the lines of, oh, if you're ever interested in doing something along the, like, I won't say this in a way that makes it sound like, that scene I just saw you do you want to do it again, but to me? Because that's fucking weird. Don't like request other people's scene. That's like going to a tattoo artist like, that tattoo on this person, this picture of this tattoo off of Instagram, can you put it on my skin too? No, I don't think I can.
Because realistically, you probably don't want the exact same scene they just did anyway. Like, different people are going to like different things. Like, it's much more interesting and useful to talk about, like, how would we do that together? How, you know, what would be involved in that?
What you want is the feeling you had while watching that scene. And the things that made you felt however you felt about watching that scene. That's not how that bottom felt during that scene. Mm. And the things that will evoke that feeling in you are not necessarily the same things you just saw happen, right? Seeing a thing happen and having it done to you, it's not even necessarily going to evoke the same feeling. Anyway, you want the idea you had that you took away from the scene you watched. You don't want the experience of the scene you watched. Mm. All of that aside, what I do tend to say, though, is like, oh, you're talking about enjoying the Fireplay or whatever. You know, I've actually been looking to get into a little bit of Fireplay lately, and like, you know, if that's the thing you ever want to chat about, like, you and I should maybe talk about doing a thing at some point. Or like, oh, I'd love to, like, oh, I mean, you're real cute. If you ever want to talk about doing something like that together, like, that'd be great. I like to open with, if you want to talk about doing XYZ thing, because really that is what you are pitching. The negotiation is the process of finding out if you are compatible and going to enjoy doing all of these things. You are like, hi, would you like to start that conversation? You're not saying, hi, do you want to play? Because frankly, neither of you know yet. Do you want to find out if we want to play? Do you want to find out if there's stuff we want to do together? Sure.
Yeah, I remember like when I used to go to the sex club in Toronto, and sometimes men would approach me and just be like, do you want to go to the third floor? Meaning like basically, do you want to go fuck? And they like wouldn't even say anything before that. And it's like, I always felt like, well, first of all, no, because that's a disrespectful approach. But even if I was going to entertain the question and try to answer the question, the answer is I don't know, because I don't know you. I don't know if I want to fuck you, because I don't know anything about how you would fuck me and if we have anything in common in terms of our tastes and what our chemistry's like.
Right.
Yeah. Impossible to tell.
Right. And like, certainly there are people for whom that approach would work. Like, certainly there are, especially for sex stuff, if you're at a play event and people are there, like, there are often people that are looking for anonymous sex. There are people looking for like, yes, and don't even tell me your name, right?
Yeah.
Or like, blindfold me and bring two friends. Like that, there are those people in the world, right? Certainly that's not you. And also, like, that isn't gonna fly in the same way at a kink event. Like, you were just gonna need to have some kind of conversation at the very least, right? That might work for a small percentage of people at just a sex event, but regardless, like, I don't know, start a conversation about the fun, sexy things around you. Eventually, the fun, sexy things you both enjoy doing are gonna come up at some point.
Yeah.
And then you can just drop in there, like, hey, I like dropping it like a thread so that the other person can pick it up whenever they want, right? Like, if you were interested in doing this thing, would love to talk to you about it. Also, just like, you don't like, and then we'll talk about another thing or whatever, like, because I don't want to make them give me a hard no, and frankly I don't want to hear one. I don't need you to be like, no, I'm actually never going to approach you about that, and don't want to. Ew.
Yeah, it's a good point, because you're trying to manage your own mood as well, so that you can like stay at the party and not get like triggered and end up crying in the bathroom, which I've definitely done at like regular parties. I don't think I've ever needed to do that at a play party, thank the Lord. But
yeah, no, recently I was talking to a friend at conferences who like jokingly was like, yeah, if I haven't spent at least half a day crying in my room at a con, is it even a con? Like, have I? And honestly, like,
yeah,
sometimes you just, and that's, I was talking to multiple people who made that joke. Like, I don't, it's, you are managing your feels. But yeah, I'm managing like my own feelings and giving space for my feelings, but also like, I don't need to hear back to back hard no's, because I would like to be able to say this again in the view, whatever, right? Like, so I can give space for folks, and also give space for folks who are like, I don't have that in me right now, but I might approach you about that later. I might, whatever. Sure, fine. And I find this specifically useful as someone who is often approaching people to bottom. Because, let's be honest, bottoms like feeling pursued. That is part of the thing, right? We like bottoming to things. We also like bottoming to flirting. Who knew? weird.
Yeah.
And the tops we like doing some scary shit is the thing. And, like, it can be scary approaching people for particularly heavy types of play, right? Like, I know several tops who rarely approach people who are just like, nah, I do what I do. People know what I do. I do this loudly out in the kink world. People who are interested in that will find me and can, and they can do that. But I'm not going to walk around asking random pretty people if they are into me doing these horrifying things to them. Don't feel as great about the yeses I get when that happens. I don't. Yeah. I feel much better knowing they just fucking found me because they know who I am and what I do and what I want to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I can absolutely understand that, right? Like, yeah. I totally get being like, nah, you need to tell me with your whole face loudly that you like doing this thing, and then we can maybe do anything about that. But that is, like, baseline my expectations for my bottoms, because that is, let's be honest, a reasonable thing to expect. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, hey, if you ever want to, like, talk to me about doing that thing, you can come back around and do that thing. Not only gives me a little wiggle room for, like, you can just soft no and be like, aha, yeah, anyway, and talk about something else. And I'll be like, I see you. I get it. No, that's fine. That's cool. Okay. Right. But, and also, it is kind of a softball that tops can, like, hardball back at me is the thing. I'm like, ah, now... And when they come back later, they have the confidence that, like, no, I excitedly said I am into these things. And they flirt with me 20 minutes later, and it's like, oh, they did it all by themselves. I've forgotten.
Yeah.
I'm a goldfish. They just thought I was pretty. Wow. Right? Like, no, I told them to do it. But, you know.
Yeah.
So they have the confidence that they're not being, like, predatory in any sort of way. And also, I get to feel spontaneously desired at other times in the future, which is a thing that feels good to all of my bottomy things.
Mm. Yeah, that's smart. One last thing before we go is, what can you do if you're at a play party and you become anxious or overwhelmed or overstimulated? It depends on the bathroom situation, because, like, mm-hmm. if you're going to be in there for 5, 10, 15 minutes and there's very limited bathrooms, then you might not want to be there. But that's mm-hmm. usually what I would do for just a quick couple minutes of a break. There's also sometimes spaces where you're allowed to go check your phone. Like, you know, people got to have a space usually where they can check their phone in case of emergencies or whatever. And that can mm-hmm. be a good space to go if it helps you with overwhelm to just kind of, like, look at your phone, or even, like, pretend to look at your phone for a few mm-hmm. minutes. And then I also sometimes would do, like, a little bit of internal family systems type stuff, where I would, like, sort of look inward and talk to the part of me who's anxious and kind of be like, hey, what's up? Like, what are you actually scared of right now? And, like, can I give any reassurance or whatever? And just kind of mm-hmm. give myself that reassurance internally, if I can find, like, a little corner to do that for, like, 2 minutes. But what's your advice on this?
Yeah, this is going to sound meaner than I mean it, because my advice is leave, but not, like, permanently.
Yeah.
But just, like, I've rarely seen, like, no reentry. Mm. And even if that is a thing, like you said, there is a place for checking your phone or getting a smoke or whatever. That is usually outside and separate from the play space, because we want you to be able to do those things, but we don't want it happening anywhere near the play. So that can be a pretty good place to, like, get a little air, if you can, especially if you can get outside the venue. Like,
yeah,
I feel my whole nervous system change when I am outside of whatever play space I am in, just because whatever volume drops to almost nothing. The air is less stagnant. There are not people everywhere. And you can just breathe for a second. So if you can fucking get outside, do that.
I also find it helpful to go drink a glass of water. Like, I find it's a similar mm-hmm. effect in terms of, like, resetting my nervous system. If there's somewhere to just grab, like, a cold glass of water and just, like, mm-hmm. slowly drink it.
Yeah. If there's a place you can go where... For me, I need to be sure no one's going to try and talk to me, too. So that's also, outside can help with that. And you can kind of like scoot around a corner or something.
I would sometimes like actually pretend to be on a phone call in these types of situations if I really didn't want to be talked to. And usually I would just like pretend I was talking to like my friend or my mom or something and just like tell them about the night so far. Just decompress.
You could even just be talking to a really chatty person or just like look concerned and be like, and just do a lot of,
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what are we doing about that?
Right. Yeah, I've done that too, for sure.
Okay. That's all you've got? Come on. Like, what?
I love that you're giving this Oscar-worthy performance just for me on Zoom right now. I love it.
I'm just trying increasingly annoyed to imagine this other person just talking more. Like, yeah, just, it's fine. Just ramble. Keep going.
Yeah.
Or you just do the really bored, like, okay. Okay. But regardless, there's often also an aftercare room, which is a really great space because it is ideally made to be quiet and calm. It's not always in play spaces, right? But if the venue that this is hosted at has a room that they can make for that, you know, I've seen a decent amount of spaces do it, and that can be really nice because it's just low lighting, soft things, other people who don't want to talk to you because they just did some shit. And you can just get cozy in there, and you know, you're talking about fake calling a friend, could actually call a friend.
True.
Right?
That's an option.
if it would be grounding for you to like externalize your thoughts about what's happening. Sometimes for me, I just need to be like, Jesus Christ, all of these things are happening. Say all of the things and then...
Right. Or even like leave a voice memo for a friend or whatever.
Right. Exactly. Like just the process of articulating what it was allows me to like kind of take a breather and go back in. Also, you don't have to go back.
Yeah.
Is the thing. One of the biggest things I've learned in all of my years of doing sex events and things, we were just talking earlier, I think I'm over 10 years of going to like sex related conferences and stuff at this point. And one of the biggest things I've learned is like early on, it feels like that time is so precious. And that anytime you are not out actively enjoying the building or venue or whatever full of other sexy weirdos like you in doing whatever type of thing that they are doing, or at least looking for an opportunity to do all of those things, that time is wasted, and that time, and like you've ruined it, and you experienced the party badly, or whatever.
That feeling sucks.
Yeah. And that feeling will eat up the rest of an event, and that feeling will also make it so much harder to go to other events. Because it just compounds upon itself, and you are allowed to like just go to an event and spectate for a while and start to feel yourself getting tired and fucking leave.
Yeah.
And like that for me, for like learning to take time to myself in longer term events and learning to not feel bad about sacrificing an entire fucking evening to eating ice cream in my hotel room and watching a movie. Because it means the next day I have the energy to go out and spend the day instead of white knuckling it through one evening.
Yeah.
And then exhaustedly dragging myself to the next day and grumbling at everyone. And weirdly, no one wants to fucking play with me. I don't know why. I'm so fucking charming. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
That's not fun. That's not great. Yeah. So, like, you can also just be done. And that's okay. I've left entire conferences. I've moved trains to leave entire conferences a day or days early because I was like, I need to not be here anymore. Yeah. I need to be at my house, which is with my things. Goodbye. I love you all. Goodbye. I'll message you on the internet.
Yeah.
I'll see you in a year or 3 years or some. Like, I'll see you all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope that this advice helps you, listeners, if you are attending a play party anytime soon. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find me online at katesloan.com, which is also my Blue Sky username. I have 2 books out, 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do, which I just finished recording the audiobook of. So there'll be details about where that is pre-orderable at some point. And my other book is 200 Words to Help You Talk About Sexuality and Gender. I also made a podcast miniseries called Making Magic, How the Magic Wand Became the World's Most Famous Vibrator, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. You're already listening to one, so I know you know how to get them. What else? My most recent newsletter was finally the story of my random acts of muff dive encounter and how the actual cunnilingus aspect of it went, because I wrote two previous newsletters about kind of like the lead up, and I just published the one that was about the actual pussy eating. You can sign up for $5 a month at katesloan.email to get those newsletters. Where is your stuff?
I'm Billy Lore. You can find all the things I do over at BillyLore.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Billy Lore and at Billy Lore _ respectively. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks and at thedildorks.com. We're also at patreon.com/thedildorks. So that's where you go toss a couple of bucks our way. For $6 a month, you get access to the Patreon-only Discord. And at $12 a month, you get our Patreon-only bonus episodes.
Yeah, the most recent bonus episode was really juicy. We talked about the Random Acts of Muff Dive hookup in great detail. We talked a lot about like people pleasing and communication and how I struggled with that throughout that encounter, which got into some interesting discussion of like ask versus guess culture and socialization. We talked about some queer movies and happy endings and queer stories, not that kind of happy ending. And we talked about a vintage lesbian porn screening I went to and a vibrating bra that I reviewed.
Nice.
I want to say thank you to our top tier Patreon supporters who we thank every week. Amy, Jay, Robin, Natalie, Todd, MB, and our most hated patron. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Addison Finch, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Been talking for half an hour. Yeah, I'm okay with this being like a 45-ish minute episode because I have to edit it today anyway. So
yeah, that's fair. I will try and keep on task and make the editing as smooth as possible. I have started recording, so you're going to, future you will also hear me say that.
Great. Let's do a countdown.
And by then you'll know if it was true or not. 5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Great. Great. Oh, yeah. He did that scene with right? At one point?
I don't know.
Was that Miss? I don't know. I might be wrong. I always remember that she was like really hyped for it. And then when she came back from the scene, she was like glowing and we were all like, oh my God, you got fucked good, huh?
I mean, that does sound like.